From Death Row, and I think people might have been even scared to come up against that. And Master P went ahead and said, man, come on over here, man, and taught him.
Let me teach you some game.
The real business isn't in front of you. And that's the illusion that a lot of artists want you to believe when they post all this stuff. The real business is in the infrastructure. This is what's going on behind the curtain. Yep. What P did is sat Snoop down and get him tutelage on that. I know this because I sat with Snoop. And he's actually said
it.
But Master P at one time in the 90s was estimated to be worth, we talk about Jay and Diddy, and rightfully so, but in the 90s,
wow,
he was estimated to be like $400 million.
Oh my God.
He was an ice cream man.
That ice cream man.
Right. In that golden bedroom or something, remember?
Like, Earl, Earl Pagans.
Give me one last story, man.
Okay, I got you. Let me see what I want to do, All right, let's talk about Tiffany Haddish telling a really interesting story about Beyonce and Jay-Z. So Tiffany, she was being hella transparent with TV One's new series called Uncensored, and she was revealing how she went to a Jay-Z concert. She was so geeked out because she got invited to the after party. She's speaking to Jay-Z, there's another actress, and then here's what else happens.
Where I was talking to Jay-Z, right? I was talking to Jay-Z for a little bit, and there was another actress that was there who was also talking to Jay-Z. And she touched Jay-Z's chest, and Beyonce came walking up like, but she didn't say that. But her demeanor, her body, the way she walked up on her was like, man, I'm a man's chest, right? And so then she started talking to that actress, and some other stuff happened, but I ain't gonna say that again. But it's gonna be in these streets, you gonna know.
Tiffany Haddish, man.
All right. I love Tiffany Haddish. She's always in a good mood when you see her on the camera.
Yeah,
fun. Yeah, she's a lot of fun. Tracy, thank you for that celebrity wire.
Yes, Twitter, Instagram, citizens, at it's Tracy G, I-T-S-T-R-A-C-Y-G.
Any comments on today's show, 888-742-3345. We're going to play them back. It's the Ice Cream Man. First time I heard a song called Ice Cream Man was the Loonies. And then Master P.
He was in the Bay.
All in the Bay. It's in the morning.
Ice cream.
Here we are on the freeway. playing Garth Brooks on the Garth Brooks station. Got that double Garth. Chesney doing a reggae song about Jesus? Like, who fucking lost a bet on this one? The Wailers. I'm guessing the Wailers lost the bet on this one and then had to play with Kenny Chesney. Fucking what the fuck? I guess they're going to rebrand the throwback hip-hop station and change the name from Backspin to LL Cool J's Rock the Bells Radio. I think that's... I heard an ad that at least implied that was going to be the case. I don't know. Spa shit!
Rock the Blues. Coming up, Little Walter, and from his latest release, Strip It Down, here's blues singer, songwriter, guitar player Casey James doing Bulletproof. I'm Tony Coulter, and you're listening to B.B. King's Blues Velvet.
SiriusXM.com/on-demand to learn more.
We're putting our lives in danger, all for some silly rainbow. Poppy, let's not go. Stay safe with me.
Ah, that was beautiful. But
I know everything will be just fine, as long as you stick with me, oh my. Whether the weather's fair or fine, I know there'll be always a clear blue sky and sun shining yellow and bright behind. Even the darkest clouds, there's always a light.
A fire, things have never been so dire. I can't stand any more positivity.
That's so bad. It's like a bunny.
This is the height of disaster.
Yay!
All I hear is your laughter. Oh, why is it so hard for you to see? The sky could be falling.
Oh, God. Listen to this, it's killing me. I feel like this song must be like from something, like, I mean, it's from something. What is it? Let me get the full name here and hit this button. Trolls, The Beat Goes On is the artist name here. And the title is Other Side of the Storm. So I assume this is from something, and they're like both like fucking cartoon dogs or something. From the Trolls movie. So yeah, are they cartoon trolls then? Or cartoon dogs, or like, are they kids fighting the trolls? I don't know. I don't know what trolls is. I don't know how trolls works.
Are your hands always sticky?
Oh yeah.
Do you use Velcro to lace up your shoes?
I mean,
do you have the luxury of taking a nap every day?
Yeah.
Then get ready for 3 hours of music for those in the backseat. It's Shortwave Radio on Kids Place Live.
As you travel around and listen to different storytellers across the country, you can tell an awful lot about storytellers just from their tone of voice. And I used to experiment with this. I would speak in a really low voice, and my whole personality changes.
Down from the heights of Mount Olympus came the mighty Zeus, wielding his thunderbolts.
Whereas if I raise my voice, here's what happens.
Hi, boys and girls. This morning we're going to hear some stories. Ooh, I bet each and every one of you knows a very special story, don't you? I'll bet you do too, even you big third grade boys. I'll bet you know a very special story. So, now everybody needs to be quiet. Don't we practice our listening skills? Okay. We're going to open a magic window, boys and girls. Knock that window, even though it's hot in here, isn't it? And knock that window, no, a magic window into your imagination. We're going to go into Imagination Land.
So just by changing your voice a little bit, you see, you can change your whole personality. Some people like to do this with music. They like to take stories and turn them into songs.
Me, I have no personality. So like I have to change my voice.
A story that you knew
in order
very, very
to do
well,
anything, have any kind of career.
But you wanted to do a new version of it. Well, what you could do is you could turn it into a song. And the way you turn an old story into a song is just make it rhyme.
A word?
And then you could turn it into any kind of a song you want. Maybe it could be a blues song,
yep,
for instance.
Well, this is a story of Little Red Riding Hood. Well, this is a story of Little Red Riding Hood. Well, she lived with her mama in a cottage in the wood. All right, yeah, 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 yeah.
Or maybe it could be a preschool. It could be a preschool song.
This is a story of Red Riding Hood.
I think these kids are laughing at this dude.
Lived in a cottage.
Like, not with him, not like, oh, this fucking comedy is phenomenal. There's like, look at this fucking dumbass.
Or it could be a country tune.
Well, this is a story of the Red Riding Hood.
Or maybe it could be an old English ballad.
This is a story of Little Red Riding Hood. Lived in a cottage, a cottage.
It could be like one of those 50s oldies. I mean, it could be like...
Yeah, talk to the kids about 50s oldies.
This is a story of Red Riding Hood. Lived in a cottage. It was deep in the wood.
This is a story of a little red riding hood.
Or maybe,
Hey, keep going. Keep going.
A nightclub kind of tune. It's like a...
What?
Well, this is a story.
What kind of fucking nightclubs you hanging out in?
A little red riding hood. She lives in a cottage deep in the wood.
Ah, you're all good for that.
That's it. Apparently, that's that whole bit. It's like no payoff.
they take a seat. Right over there, sat on the stairs, stay or leave. The cabinets are bare, and I'm unaware of just how weak.
I didn't buy tickets to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but the Red Hot Chili Pipers, the self-described most famous bagpipe band on the planet. The pair went to the concert anyway and said they had a good time. The couple hopes to see the real Chili Peppers in the future.
I wonder how many times that mistake has been made.
That was great.
How often do you think that mistake has been made? I went to go see the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and instead they were
I mean, that's
the
mistake right there.
Peppers. It's happening.
Like, ah, I accidentally saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Kiss, and then it was
fuck.
People kiss.
Shit.
Really?
That's right.
Huh. Stay or?
For a little while, yeah.
Guys, there's only one day left until Valentine's. That's it. One day. Get it done today. If you're still looking for the perfect gift, 1-800-Flowers.com is here for you.
Superstar snowboarder from Southern California. You're a superstar snowboarder. You guys should get together. Hang out on the slopes.
You know, where is that video? Do we have that? Because I'd like to compare my style to hers.
Maybe tomorrow we'll figure that out. We're not going to do that to you.
Take ownership of it, and as coaches, our job is to nudge them in the right direction, guide them.
And that will be that. This game, just what the doctor ordered for the Warriors, a confidence-building game for Golden State.
Josh McDaniels deserves major
energy.
Brady was remarkable. Belichick fell.
Mixed with a whole lot of pop and sizzle.
You want to dance? Let's dance.
Yeah, that's what I call that. Pop and sizzle. You want to dance?
No.
Let's dance. I'm a sports personality.
Son of sports, we have Adam Shine. And it meant our tank today at 63-36-462. Absolutely, found Lowry's in the books. One more to play with, all fired up Tuesday. Calls have been off the charts today. Really nice mix of topics. Non-stop on Johnny Manziel and his interview with Pardon My Take and Good Morning America and why I'm rooting for Johnny Manziel. The calls on Johnny have been superb. And why I believe there's a place for him if he's right mentally, physically.
Taking shots at him, and LeBron eventually getting so frustrated, he punches down. That's what they call it, punching down. And that elevates LeVar Ball's status.
Commodore Stadium.
I want to live in Orlando so bad.
Hey, you know who I saw last night?
Who?
Roquan Smith.
Oh, why? Where?
So I'm in Scottsdale. This is where I'm living.
Are you Roquan Smith, Georgia Bulldog linebacker, NFL hopeful?
Yes.
That Roquan Smith. Yeah.
He is
are
working
you
out.
Recording this in a fucking bathroom.
All these guys that declare for the draft usually go
an
someplace to get ready for the combine.
Yeah, no one showed up.
So they
see
train and they get the right food and get their bodies as perfect because this is like literally.
Let's let it happen. Because wouldn't it feel a lot better if it was just a natural
I'm
thing?
I'm a little kid, though. I'm a little kid.
I'm on Sean's side here.
Come on.
Oh, my God.
Fucking Bruno, I'll do ahead of this team for so many guys who thought that they were going to be, you know, and doing that, swinging for the downs.
I think it's just, I mean, changing your sequencing. You're using something less.
Yeah.
The book on the pitcher is different. So, you're not quite sure what to
do. The book on the pitcher is different.
Things. So you could be faced with that again this year in the draft or this offseason where they might be looking at that quarterback as number one and maybe they'll take him number one. But maybe number four now all of a sudden instead of Saquon Barkley if he's still available because they maybe might need some help at the running back position, maybe you're looking at a left tackle. You know, maybe you're looking at the best offensive lineman that you have if you feel like.
A couple things. So talking about the Mets, there's two things. And obviously, Jim, I listen to you whenever I get a chance. Is there a chance, two things, is there a chance that the Mets try to add a starting pitcher? And why haven't they acquired Luke Roy yet? Help me with this.
Oh, man. All right. So the first, I thought that before they got Frazier, there was a better than 50-50 chance that they were going to acquire a starter. It definitely seemed like they were going down that
And it is a great dialogue to talk about issues that concern the sport and how do we move the sport forward. But also, as we're doing planning on the competition side, what's going to be next in terms of the cars and the powertrains and these sort of things, it's a great place to have that dialogue. And then obviously on the fan and the marketing side, there's equally important topics we talk about there. So it's a big value and benefit for us.
Jim, let's talk about science and technology because it's something that's kind of new to me. I was working on these cars back in the day before
quantum we had engineering. A lot of science and technology. Is that Mass Effect stuff with quantum entanglement? Is that for real?
And you guys are coming to the racetrack with some incredible race cars, not only on the racetrack, but on the street as well. Some of the things that we're able to do today, if it's a passenger car or a race car, they're incredible. Talk a little bit about the future of that and what more will we see in the line of science and technology?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that science and technology and mathematics are so critical. The engineering of what we do for our production Camaro ZL1s and our production vehicles, our cars, our trucks, our crossovers, our propulsion systems, but also that same application for everything we do in racing. We're obviously involved in NASCAR at all the levels. We're involved in IMSA, and then we've got about six other series in which Chevrolet competes in around the world. And so science and technology, critically important, and we spend a lot of time recruiting talented students and graduates that have those skills. And then it's really a key part. If you think about the design of a production Camaro ZL1, they can go 198 miles top speed, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, and then not only go fast in a straight line, but have the ability in terms of lateral acceleration to get over 1.2 Gs. That's really, really quite important. And so science and technology allows us to do the modeling, the analysis, the simulation. And so when we go and create the hardware to go and test on the track or to go on the street or on the racetrack, we can really deliver more precisely. And that's exactly what we do. One of the things we added to our kind of science and technology tool chest is we put a simulator in Charlotte. It's the same simulator that we use in our production cars and trucks. And we're able to, it's like a big, huge video game, but we're able to really, really adjust a lot of the technology in the car, the setups, and simulate it to have the drivers drive the vehicles with their crew chiefs and then make decisions on what we want to do for the track. We do the same thing for our production vehicles for the showroom. And so science and technology, critically, critically important.
You know, you talked a bit ago, and I know marketing probably is something that you have a lot of people and a lot of very good people doing, but this is a different kind of era. I mentioned Hendrick Motorsports, but I think it goes across the whole sport in terms of you've heard a lot about the young drivers and a bit of a generation gap we got in there with our NASCAR lineup right now in the Cup Series. How much of an opportunity is that for, in terms of the Chevy young drivers, the very, very, very successful drivers that you guys have in your pipeline, kind of telling America about these guys, using them in advertising down the road? Are we just scratching the surface of what this new group can do?
Yeah, well, what I like about our lineup at Chevy, we have veterans like Jimmy Johnson and Newman, McMurray and Kane and Elmendinger. These guys know how to win. They know how to win and lead teams from the cockpit of their car, working with their crew chiefs and their team owners. And then we have these younger drivers, you know, like Austin Dillon and Ty Dillon, Bubba Wallace, William Byron, Alex Bowman, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson. All these guys are under 27 years old, and guys like William Byron, 20, and Chase Elliott, you know, 22. These guys are young guys. And what I really like is the ability to mix those two, the veterans and the younger drivers together. And we're working with all of these drivers and really getting them tied into everything we're doing at Chevrolet. And we have them up to our technical center here in Detroit, or our proving grounds in Milford, Michigan.
Boston, Flames playoff lives without Mike Smith. The Bruins can't seem to lose.
Kulak fires one off. Boychuk. Early gets the puck. Kachuk shoots. Scores! Matthew Kachuk. He's drawn three penalties and scored the game-tying goal. It's all even at two.
Islanders, Columbus, two very unpredictable teams. Just ask the Islanders about Friday.
Stolen by Barzell.
Ask the Islanders about Friday.
Got a little bit scared.
Patrick and McGinnis on tap tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio.
The Neural Spine Institute is an international destination Man, I just busted up, man. I can't believe that I was laughing like I was laughing. I know the people that next to me were like, man, what's going on over there? But I mean, Bron is also a guy that you look at him and it's hard for him to get sympathy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like a lot like me, like Sho, you know, the bigger guys, Kane. You don't feel like an infinity for him. But Bron now, whenever somebody hits Bron or he goes down, like you're like, oh man, it's my guy. You have an emotional connection, and I look forward to seeing that grow.
Yeah, everybody said that, like, you know, those type of wrestlers, that mold of a wrestler wouldn't work right now in 2017, 2018, because I think when you look at the true underdogs and the wrestlers that the fans have gotten behind, you look at, like, somebody like a Daniel Bryan, an AJ Styles, even somebody like a Finn Balor, but I think Braun Strowman has broken that mold. He has shown you that you can have that size. That size does matter in the WWE, and it's working. And the fans are behind him. Like you said, it's hard to have sympathy for somebody like Braun Strowman because of his size, but they're falling in love with Braun Strowman. Yeah. There's that emotional, you know, connection right now with Braun Strowman. And you're right. You know, you kind of look at Braun, and sometimes it didn't work with the Big Show when he tried to be cute, tried to be funny. It's working with Braun Strowman. It just fits in. So he can be that monster, and he could roar all day long, but he makes jokes like he did last night, and it works.
And you see the spotlight. Come on. You see him pull out this humongous cello. Yes. Playing in his lap. I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff that makes people go, okay, I see what you're doing, Bron. I'm with you. I'm behind you. And that's what the kids, you know, like, we have a lot of kids. Vince always said, put smiles on faces. Last night, there were a lot of people smiling, and it wasn't just the kids. Like, they reached the whole populace of our fan base. And I'm very proud that all of the finishers meant something last night.
Yes.
That was the best row of finishes that I've seen probably in the last 2 or 3 months. Like, the entire show, every finish was live. I mean, it was really, really good. And I just couldn't wait for the next match.
And once again, there was a real emphasis on pro wrestling last night.
They wrestled.
Yeah, once again, Raw starts with a match.
All of you people that complain about the WWE is watered down and there's a lot of talking and there's no wrestling.
I said,
I'll tell you what, you didn't watch the show last night because they got it in.
844-796-7874. We will talk to the male population of the nation early on, because at 11:30, Sexual Chocolate will take over the studio and talk to the ladies. But I want to get into Raw last night. Now with that Elimination Chamber match, Kurt Angle made the decision. We're going to have 7 wrestlers in that match. What do you think? And what do you think the chances are of a Braun Strowman, of an Elias, of a Finn, of a Cena, of a Reigns, of a Miz, and a Seth Rollins? We'll get the take of the nation. We're back. Mark Henry and LaGreca, right here on Busted Open.
We cover pro wrestling like no one else in the world.
You're listening to Busted Open
on SiriusXM Rush 93.
Tonight on SiriusXM Sports.
Can LeBron James and the new-look Cleveland Cavaliers win their 4th straight game and 2nd straight after the roster overhaul? Find out tonight on SiriusXM NBA Radio when the Cavaliers visit the Oklahoma City Thunder, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Maximum impact. And because they're giving away the ultimate guide to promotional products absolutely free to everyone who texts FORM to 88988. They'll make your logo look impeccable.
Ooh,
on your choice
impeccable
of
logos.
Rolling Stones. Mick at RollingStones.com. Oh, man. Just gave out Mick Jagger's real email address. Oh, that was a mistake, man. He's going to be in his hotel room later. Keith, get over here. Oh, I just got a sudden influx of emails. From Cambridge. Oh, Massachusetts. How does that happen, Keith? Keith, I have another question. Why are we sharing a hotel room? We're both billionaires, Keith. This is... it's curious. It's curious, Keith, that we're sharing a hotel room when we're billionaires. We're not sweating it anymore, Keith. Keith. Some people really appreciate my accent work. No, I do accent work, like if you guys see, like a Hugh Grant movie, and like he's got a sore throat that day, and he smelled his lines, and I'll dub it in. No? Okay. You guys believe me, like, holy shit, that's a good gig. Sounds easy enough, you just dub in the key, oh man. Good on you.
And close them and point, that's it. I know it sounds crazy, y'all like, what? But I'm telling y'all, it looked good.
Watch. Apparently there's a Kevin Hart station starting tomorrow, according to this. Well, okay. Love making their deals. I wonder how that pays out for them. Where they're like, oh yeah, we got these big names on these stations. Like, is that bringing Kevin Hart's fan base to satellite radio somehow? Like, I don't know.
And I tell you, the eating steak is manly. It is the only manly attribute I have. I know nothing about cars. I'm not handy. I can't fix things. Something breaks in our apartment, I just look at my wife like, we should call someone. I don't even call my wife calls. Some stranger comes over, I just kind of watch him work. I'm like, you want some brownies or something? My wife could make us some brownies. I don't know how to work the stove. Sometimes I try and act like I have something more important to do. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be over here working on my diarrhea jokes. In case you want to talk sports or steak or something. But I don't know why steak is considered manly. I guess it harkens back to when a man would hunt the animal, they'd kill the animal, and then they'd eat the animal. But now we just eat the animal. And it's not as if hunting a cow was ever that hard. Today, fellas, we are going to hunt ourselves the elusive cow. Oh, there's one right here.
He wants to take a picture with all you guys going crazy behind him. And he fucking goes over and he stands on the stage and then the crowd has to go nuts and he takes the picture. I'm like, I said to Jim later, I go, what the fuck is that all about? He goes, all the metal bands do that now for their Instagrams. And the people want to get on that, on like,
oh my
metal guys'
God,
Instagram.
That is so cute. I want to see this picture.
So, and this is at the Ridgefield Playhouse. And again, just a blast. A lot of Bennington fans there.
That's awesome.
It was just, Voss was fucking great. And Voss is going to be an NA convention, which, I mean, to me seems like it's against the entire program. It's right there on fucking page one. But, you know, his material is just great. I don't know if you guys know how bad Voss was, a drug addict, when he was younger, but it was just... So those stories, for some reason, they're always the funniest stories in the world. The worst stories...
All right, I believe Jeff's going to take a hit for us and show that he won't cough.
If he can find some pot.
If I was you... Oh, he's got... I would quit smoking pot, too, but if I had COPD, but I guess at this point it doesn't matter. I don't think death would be that different for Jeff. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking that Jeff's every day is like JD's... camping trip.
Right. Torture.
Here we go.
Oh, no coughing.
Well, that sounds great. Hello?
She's still coughing.
Oh, jeez. Dude, what color is your phlegm?
Ugh.
Deal. Well, I'll tell you, I would certainly look into, if I cared about my health, I would stop smoking everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Speech Impediment Man says if Jeff dies, he's ready to move up the whack pack ladder. I'll play that for you and get Jeff's comment. Listen to this.
Hey, this is Speech Impediment Man. I'm hoping Jeff the drunk is okay. But hey, if he dies, maybe I'll move up the whack pack ladder. Maybe Howard will start taking my calls again.
Everyone would just start taking my
everybody
calls.
Everybody thinks you're not taking their calls.
I don't know why.
Everybody be having the same experience.
He ain't taking my calls.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take calls every minute from the same people. I mean, it's just awful with you guys. Speech Impediment Man, what's your fucking deal? I take calls from you.
Well, I call, you got a new screener. I mean, I don't like the guy because he doesn't put me on.
Dude, we can't, we get a lot of people calling. I can't put you on every time you call. You're a fucking caller. Yeah. I can't take the same call every fucking time.
Hey, what's up on my segment, bitch? Jeff, I hope you're okay, but I mean, I hope you die so I can move it back in the West.
Why did that woman just kick you to the bank, fuckface?
Hey, is Jason gonna eat your dead arm?
All right. Fuck him. He's another crybaby. Because we don't take his call. So take your call.
Howard, the screener said usually he has nothing to say. Like,
absolutely.
Let us, like, his question is, did Howard watch Gotham last night?
Yeah, it's the same question about Gotham.
Sometimes, oh, my God.
Yeah, he's worse than you.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It's like boring versus boring.
Believe me,
speech impediment. Dimensions.
Is he taking any medications?
No, I'm not taking any
medications. Oh, yeah, he takes stuff.
Propanolol.
That's what it is.
Propanolol.
Well, it said it, too. It said...
About 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, and I catch your show every day, so I'm a new listener, but I love you.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you.
Has been in my head for years, many, many years, so to be able to hear you every day is... quite a thrill for me, so this is exciting.
Where do you live in Michigan?
Well, right now I live in Pontiac, but I grew up in Detroit.
Uh-huh, yeah. Love it all. Michigan is great.
Right.
Michigan's a great state. It really is, and Detroit's coming back. I'd love to see Flint, you know, get more help and get back on its feet. And you know, Michigan's just a stalwart, you know, state. It always.
So being perfectly awesome. When you hand the car in, and I had a BMW, right? When you hand the car in, they try to get you in and say, hey, if you come in now, we'll get you in another lease, no problem.
It's a new car!
Either way, you got to come in for a pre-examination on your lease.
Oh, is that what they told you to turn your head and cough?
Yeah, that's when they tickle my balls.
It'll be interesting.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess, well, now with Winter Games, too, I mean, people remember Bibiana, so yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think Bibiana, I think...
On their smartphones, of course. It takes no time to set up your teams, and Jobber's free support team is always there to help you out. Think of it as push-ups and...
Today to start your free trial, go to getjobber.com. That's getjobber.com.
Hey, what's up? I'm Chuck D from Public Enemy and also Prophets of Rage. And this is where the music conversation lives. Volume, Sirius XM, 106.
Rap, pop, country, all fair game. You're listening to Feedback.
Volume, Sirius XM, 106.
You annihilated this week. Now it's Sunday and new week. A future of fun.
Mary Poppins. Then we
XM.com to activate your radio now.
Uncertainty. And so if you start paying.
Singer, actor, punk rock emissary, member of Black Flag, back in the day, Rollins Band, many other bands. He is 57 today. Doesn't look it.
Still in the mosh pit?
Probably. A little bit. He's getting a little gray, but he's not looking old at all by any stretch. So anyway, we have Steve Knopper with us. Let's bring him to the air. Steve Knopper, who wrote a pretty amazing article for those of us who spent some time in the pit back in the day. Nazi Punks Fuck Off, How Black Flag, Bad Brains, and More Took Back Their Scene from White Supremacists. Steve, how are you, man?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well,
happy
thank
birthday.
You.
And thanks for writing this article. It feels kind of timely, doesn't it?
That was the idea. I it was the thing that was, I mean, you know, Nazi Punks Fuck Off was running through my head quite a bit last year, particularly around Charlottesville. I just kept thinking about this.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we're just saying off air, as somebody who went to a lot of shows back in the day, particularly like me, like hardcore shows, you know, skinheads were always ever present. But, I mean, you got to go back traditionally, like the skinhead movement in the 60s, it wasn't racist. It was blacks, it was Hispanics, it was whites. It was just a working class thing. It wasn't until the 70s when all the nationalism came in. So how did it bleed into all this punk?
You know, my story, the history kind of starts with punk. So I can't really tell you too much about the history of nationalists and skinheads. But, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, you had punk rockers who were playing with this kind of fascist imagery. You know, members of the Sex Pistols, Sid Vicious, and Susie from Susie and the Banshees actually wore swastikas.
Even David Bowie.
Right. But I mean, it seems crazy to think about it that they would do such a thing, but it was sort of for, you know, what can we do to shock people the most? Well, that's the answer.
And do you think it's because it was too, like, you have to remember that the late 70s, early 80s, it was, you know, this generation of kids were removed enough from World War II that maybe they didn't recognize how awful, and, you know, they weren't touched directly by World War II, so maybe, like you just said, like, this was shocking. This was the most shocking thing they could do to be rebellious.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're asking the question of the fans later, I do think that there was a removal. And I also think that, you know, these horrible ideas are cyclical and they come back around. And there's always going to be, I mean, we're seeing it now with the alt-right and all this terrible stuff. You know, these ideas sadly never quite get killed for good. You know, they always sort of seem to pop back. If you're talking about these particular artists, Susie, Sid Vicious, David Bowie, I don't think that they were at the time, you know, actual racists who wanted millions of Jews to die, you know, in Holocausts. But they were sort of dangerously playing with this imagery. You know, they were young at the time. They were 20s, 30s, you know, early 30s, that sort of thing. And I think they were just going, what can shock people? And they were a little bit naive about it.
Well, here's the thing. I remember so vividly. Particularly, I mean, okay, just Nazis in general and, you know, like racists would show up at shows. The skinheads were the easiest to pick out because for a while there was a bit of a code. If somebody had white laces in their docks, that meant, you know, white power. Or if they had a certain number of eyelets in their boots, like, you know, over 8 eyelets, they were, you know, white power. But a lot of the skinheads couldn't tell from each other. Like, I had friends who were skinheads who'd, like, run up to other skinheads and grab them, like, are you white power? So how did you settle on the bands that you talked about? Like, I saw Bad Brains back in the day. I saw Black Flag back in the day. And I just sort of figured that element was part and parcel of the scene for whatever reason.
Yeah, I learned about, I went to shows, hardcore shows, mostly in the early 90s. I live in Denver, and so, you know, I would go to the Gothic Theater in Denver, and there'd be shows where you wouldn't think it would have anything to do with, you know, fascist skinhead or Nazi ideology. And there would just be a cluster of skinheads in the mosh pit causing mayhem. And that, you know, that was terrible. I never got deep enough into it to be able to sort of say, oh, well, what color are these people's shoelaces? You know,
right.
Are you, look at their feet and say, you know, are you a skinhead or are you not? Although, like you say, a lot of people did do that. And I kind of learned a lot about that while researching the article.
But there were different types of skinheads, right? Because,
yeah.
This even though I went to a couple of these things, I couldn't
really tell
the
difference. The hosts of the show seem like they understand.
I emailed Moby last night, who was really into the hardcore scene, and his take on it
more than the author of the article.
There were U.S. punk rock skinheads like him who were just these suburban kids who liked hardcore, and then there were U.K. far right skinheads who came over and took hold of the scene in weird places like, say, Orange County. So, like, could you, maybe it was hard to tell the difference, but at least can we say that there were definitely two sets of skinheads. Those who were not, you know, of the Nazi persuasion, and those who just kind of liked having no hair?
Yeah, I mean, at least two. And then there were those who actually were anti-skinheads, who were anti-fascists.
Oh,
and they were skinheads, too, and they wore a certain color shoelace. So yeah, it was very confusing. You know, who do you fight?
It sounds like gangs.
Who do you avoid? Yeah, it really was. I mean, that's my sense of what that scene was like, for sure. But there was really only one group that was malevolent, you know, that went there to cause mayhem, and that was the Nazi skinheads.
Well, speaking of Nazi punks, fuck off. You talked to Keith Morris of Dead Kennedys. You talked to a bunch of other people. And a lot of these guys, a lot of these bands at that time, just all experienced this. You know, like the skinheads would show up, and sometimes like the bands themselves would be forced with having to deal with them because the bouncers wouldn't do much. And one of my favorite quotes was from Rollins, Henry Rollins, where he says, quote, when I had a bunch of overweight teenagers like me, because, you know, these idiots would get down the pit and just start doing the Sieg Heil and, you know, chanting. He says, when I had a bunch of overweight teenagers Sieg Heiling me, I was unable to take it seriously. I told them they wouldn't make it through a week of Army boot camp, much less the Third Reich. They got pretty mad.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, I said in the article that it was. I think for a lot of these artists, it was really surreal. You know, they just were part of this scene. You know, our band could be your life kind of thing. And they just hitched onto this amazing music that they loved, and they loved performing to their friends. And then the next thing you know, they're in these crowds, and they're having to kind of negotiate. You know, here's some skinheads who are in our slam dance pit. And they're causing mayhem, and they're hurting fans, and no one else is helping us. The bouncers often were not present, although sometimes they were. And we have to just, you know, we're like 20-year-old kids, 19-year-old kids just playing rock and roll. We're musicians, and we have to navigate this. We have to mediate this or figure out what to do. And, you know, fortunately, people like Rollins were up to the task, you know. he was someone, I think, who was his personality and his strengths, I guess you could say, were singularly qualified, made him singularly qualified to be able to deal with that.
I keep thinking those bands. I'm sorry. I keep thinking those bands must have been utterly dumbfounded too, because none of the bands that you reference here, espoused any kind of ideology that would be, you know, attractive to this group. I mean,
wondering, how did these people show up? Why did they pick hardcore? Why did they pick this scene, these Nazi skinheads, to invade? Why not metal?
I mean,
you know, hard rock? Like, why this?
The Bad Brains are four black guys. It's like, seriously,
well, that could be the reason.
These are not the guys, right?
Yeah. Well, interestingly, you know, I talked to Daryl Jennifer from Bad Brains, and he said there wasn't that much. He said that, shockingly, you know, over all the 40 years that Bad Brains had been playing, he only, you know, had people shout the N-word or say overtly racist things to him, you know, a handful of times. They didn't, for some reason, they didn't deal with it as much. But to answer your question, you know, going back to what I was saying before about the fascist imagery that some of the early punks were using, I think, but I interviewed a guy named Howie Klein, who was like an early punk scenester guy in San Francisco, that later became the president of Reprise Records. And he was talking about how at first, this was a very communal scene at San Francisco punk shows in the late 70s, early 80s. And everybody kind of got along, and they all understood, you know, fascists are bad, despite this kind of imagery being used. But then you got knuckleheads who came in. One of the guys I spoke with was saying that they didn't want to call them skinheads because there's good skinheads, so they just called them boneheads. So, you know, the boneheads started to show up in San Francisco. And, you know, they didn't understand fascists are bad. They didn't understand that concept. And then once they started coming in, they realized it's pretty fun to beat up, you know, little punk rock scrawny kids.
So they saw...
And then it started to take hold.
So they saw the Nazi iconography and said, oh, these are our people. But they weren't their people. Basically, the iconography, that the symbols, the Nazi symbols that were being used, were maybe rebellious, but people from the punk scene and the hardcore scene that were using them did not necessarily mean that they were Nazis. They were just using these symbols. And that may have attracted a whole gang of bad skinheads who basically then wanted to get in there and cause problems.
I think it depends. Like, if you were, I think it also depends on the band. Like, if you were into the English band Screwdriver, you were a fucking Nazi skinhead.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, I mean.
But you're exactly right. I think your analysis is exactly right. But I would just add that that's how it kind of started. That's how it, to answer your question, that's how it kind of seeped into the scene. But once the skinheads, the boneheads, I should say, got there, you know, this is really aggressive music. A lot of it, you know, regardless of what the lyrics are, the music itself has sort of a veneer of violence to it. It's very aggressive. And then in addition to that, a lot of these punk shows were not regulated the way, you know, you'd go to a Van Halen concert at the local arena and there's security guys with yellow shirts. There was, in the early hardcore scene, sometimes there was that, but sometimes there wasn't. Sometimes it was, you know, kind of anarchic, you know, as the song says. And so skinheads found that they could thrive there, that, you know, there weren't going to be bouncers who came up and told them to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, that was one of the scariest things to me about your article, was that how there was this sense of mayhem, that there were people who were hired to be bouncers, but they didn't do or couldn't do anything about it. I'm specifically thinking of Keith Morris from Black Flag and Circle Jerks, and he talks about the wall of death at City Gardens in Trenton, New Jersey. And I've been to City Gardens a million times, and I used to be scared to go there. This explains a lot to me. Can you talk about the wall of death?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can only tell you how Keith described it. He would say that the skinheads, who were these huge guys, you know, would lock arms and stand at the back of the venue, and they would just, you know, Red Rover style, I guess you could call it. They would surge. They would just run up to the stage at full speed, and anyone who's in their way would kind of get trampled. And Keith would watch this from the stage and just be terrified, you know, not only that this could potentially cause violence to the band, but also the fans. You know, I mean, the band is kind of responsible for the fans in a certain kind of way. And so Keith said, you know, the dramatic story that he tells me in the piece is that he eventually jumped into the crowd and kind of, he's a scrawny guy, a little guy, and he kind of faced off against these huge skinheads, and he thought he was going to be pulverized until finally, like the cavalry, the bouncers from the club, you know, ran in and saved him.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, the music was fairly aggressive because, again, hardcore in particular, you know, punk was fast and loud, but hardcore was even faster and louder. And it's funny because it was just heavy enough that it was able to sort of lure some of the guys who were into the heavier, quote-unquote, metal before that. Like, Rollins described it years ago. He was saying how, you know, hardcore is when the fuck yeah dickhead guy discovers punk rock. And he, like, just shaves his head. So that same guy with that same mentality is now in the pit and just being that guy.
Right, right. That's right. And that repeats itself over and over. I mean, Nirvana was an incredibly progressive band, and yet people would misinterpret their lyrics, and, you know, frat guys famously, you know, frat guys would play their anti-rape songs, you know, full blast as if they're sort of, you know, fuck yeah anthems. I mean,
right.
That was something
Cobain
specifically was upset about.
Totally good point.
Was there a weird, this is kind of an unusual question, but was there a weird, almost common ground? Because the early punk and the early hardcore were kind of fuck the establishment kind of guys. And it strikes me as these Nazis and these kind of guys were in the same vein, which made these people in these shows vulnerable because they weren't going to go to the establishment for protection. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I was going to address that. I think back to the point where, you know, punk and hardcore and all this stuff, it was, you know, I hate to use the cliche, but it was an alternative, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s by design. It was a rebellion against mainstream rock, the way mainstream rock worked. So it wasn't being played in arenas, and there wasn't an infrastructure for security and promoters and, you know, the people who own these venues. Early on, especially, you know, they weren't necessarily established club owners who, you know, they were flaunting the fire codes and, you know, they were breaking the rules, and they didn't have an established thing to stop people from doing this. So that just, I think that just allowed people to come in and cause mayhem. It was, I mean, in a way, I guess you could say it's analogous to the Hell's Angels' presence at concerts in the 60s. You know, they showed up like, well, hey, there's no rules here. Let's just pound people. You know, of course, that ended tragically with Altamont.
Yeah, we're talking to Steve Knopfer, who wrote an article in GQ, Nazi Punks Fuck Off, How Black Flag, Bad Brains, and More Took Back Their Scene from White Supremacists. So the question for me is, okay, so I guess you could say that DK's Dead Kennedys addressed it the most head-on by actually writing a song, Nazi Punks Fuck Off, which became kind of an anthem and a hit for them. And they were, like, one of the bigger bands of that scene. How did these other bands deal with this influx of these white supremacist skinheads? I'm like, how much could they
do? I ran into a little bit of this in the 90s.
Right. I mean,
like the mid-90s.
You know, that was a running theme in the art.
Like it was kind of tapering off, for sure. But
I mean, there
were still some fucking
kind of
crust-punk scumbags that were
punk fuck up. But basically, they would different up to this day. You know, different bands had different ways of dealing with the strategy. I mean, some you know there's one guy.
Fucking bad people.
I think it was the guy from DRI. I'm misremembering who told me what, but he said that at one point he saw these skinheads and they were kind of spouting off in the crowd and interrupting the show. And finally, he took the step of allowing the skinhead to come on stage and sort of spew his racist nonsense. And, you know, he immediately realized that, oh, that was probably a mistake. And while the guy's coming up and saying, you know, I won't say it, but you know, all the stuff that skinheads say, the one of the tour managers took a mic stand and just walloped the skinhead in the back of the head. And that created a, you know, a huge kind of Western style barroom brawl. I just always thought that was, I mean, it's violent and brutal, but I thought it was a funny image of sort of like, hey, you can say whatever you want. Wham!
Well, and I also find it that the bands that hung in there and constantly addressed and stood against the neo-Nazism, I'm thinking of Daryl, whatchamacallit?
Jennifer,
yes, from Bad Brains. What I thought was really cool is that even after dealing with as much crap as they dealt with, they actually saw some skinheads become reformed because of their music and the example that they set, right? So can you talk a little bit about, you know, Daryl's platinum record, Better Than a Platinum Record?
I mean, that's what Daryl told me. He said that, that you know, there was a guy who followed him to the bathroom before a show who was sort of like a skinhead type. And, you know, Daryl went to the bathroom and he was kind of worried about this. And then he comes out and he was expecting a confrontation. Instead, the guy said, you know, I forget the way he put it, but it was very funny. He said something like, I used to be a Nazi and a skinhead and an asshole. And now I'm reformed. You know, now I, after listening to your music and coming to your shows all these years, you know, I realize the error of my ways, and I'm, you know, I'm a former skinhead, and I believe in tolerance and this and that. And
I mean, that's
and
amazing.
Was really touched by this. He said that was just his personal story, but he said that was my Grammy award, because I don't think the Bad Brains have ever won any Grammy award.
No. Well, it's funny because you wonder, it's a really powerful story. But you wonder, as we were saying earlier, does that speak to the power and gravitas of Bad Brains, or does that speak to the fact that this kid really was not that enmeshed in the ideology? He just was an angry suburban youth looking for a way to rebel, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that question is who knows. It was just the story that a rock and roller told me on the phone. But I would say that I do think that most of these hardcore bands, you know, Screwdriver.
A rock and roller told me on the phone.
You know, and some there were some overtly Nazi bands out there, and those guys sucked.
Or at least ones that had a bad message. Like, I was thinking back to Agnostic Front, and they had that song Public Assistance, which, even though they had a Cuban lead singer, it was basically condemning, it was very condescending toward immigrants. So not everything happening on stage was super, you know, on the up and up either.
That's true. I mean,
they weren't necessarily, the band you mentioned before?
Screwdriver
with, like, White Power. You know, that was their song.
Probably stop mentioning their name, but yeah.
Yes. Gross.
But you're right. There were bands that were out there that had kind of songs that were more ambiguous about whether they were anti-fascist or actually fascist or sort of somewhere in the gray area in between. I didn't really get into that too much in the article. But yeah, that did happen occasionally.
All right, Steve Knopper, you wrote a great piece, Nazi Punks Fuck Off.
Well, I have one more question for him.
Go ahead.
Is that okay, guys?
Go ahead.
Steve, I just wanted to know your thoughts on the state of white power music today, because I know this isn't what the article is about. The article's about the scene back then. But, you know, I was just thinking of the overt racism, especially what this country's gone through with Charlottesville, and I remember, you know, one of my favorite bands is Depeche Mode, and Richard Spencer came out and said that's his favorite band, too, which, like, made me sick to my stomach.
He said they're the official band of the alt-right, which is like, well, have you listened to their music?
No. And then, of course, the Depeche guys came out and said, we have no ties to Richard Spencer or the alt-right. We do not support that movement, blah, blah, blah. But it just made me think about the state of that kind of music, and is there still this kind of scene today?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and I'm afraid my story doesn't address that, so I can't totally answer that. My sense is that there are, as ever, you know, fascist bands out there, and the fact that that Trump and Spencer and all these other people are kind of fanning the flames of it. I'm sure there are people making music in their basements right now, sadly, that are doing this stuff. It's not an issue that I addressed in my piece.
But are there kids going that are skinheads going to shows and kind of taking over scenes? I wonder if that's happening.
Yeah, well, no, Resistance Records is live and well. It's not just skinheads. There's still kids in that scene for sure going all these bands.
There are still, I mean, I did talk to some more recent bands that were talking about how skinheads still are going to the shows. You know, it's not as if the problem has been completely weeded out by the experiences that I talked about in the piece. There are some skinheads that go, and there are bands that still deal with it. I mean, I think, you know, Social Distortion is a band that, and they didn't want to talk for the story. They're certainly not a fascist band by any means, but they, you know, they are kind of plagued by this. For some reason, their style of music kind of attracts this group. My understanding is it still kind of happens at their shows, sadly, and they're not happy about it.
Well, maybe someone has to cover Nazi punks' fuck off.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, right. I think a lot of people are doing that, yeah.
All right,
I said fuck a few times this show. Did.
Steve Knopper, the article is Nazi Punks Fuck Off, How Black Flag, Bad Brains, and More Took Back Their Scene from White Supremacists. We have tweeted it out at SiriusXM Volume. Definitely read it, and we appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Of course.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, take care. Yeah, it's funny, that scene was just, those people were ready to, like, adapt or, like, glom onto anything. I remember I talked to Ian MacKay years ago when he did that song Guilty of Being White. Because I remember he's a white kid who grew up in D.C., which at the time was, back in the day, Dark Country, Chocolate City, we used to call it. And he was, like, one of the only white kids in his whole school. And, of course, you know, he got some Polish, like, white supremacist. Like, it's so good you speak for the white men. He's like, no, dude, totally the opposite. So,
oy.
All right, we should take a break. Again, the article is up on our socials. That's SiriusXM Volume. Check it out. It's definitely worth the read if you're into the hardcore thing. Be right back on Feedback.
Overproduced by Martin Hannett, take 4.
It's time to fight, get out of here! You ain't no better than the bouncers! We ain't trying to be police anyway, the cops, it ain't anarchy!
Not the bus, you're listening to Feedback with Nick and Maury.
God bless your book, what a man!
Paying tribute to the greatest moments in music, this is a Volume Playback.
On this day, February 13th, back in 1961, Frank Sinatra launched his own record label, Reprise Records. Hence, he garnered the nickname the Chairman of the Board, which he was rumored to despise. 1980, police raided the home of former Sex Pistols' Johnny Lydon, who greeted them waving a ceremonial sword. The only illegal item they found was a canister of tear gas, claimed was for self-defense. In 2002, country singer, songwriter, and legend Waylon Jennings died in his sleep after a lengthy fight with diabetes.
Oh,
he was 64 years old. And in 2012, Adele won all 6 categories
she was nominated
for at the year's Grammy Awards.
Going around.
Today's birthdays include Peter Tork of the Monkees, Peter Gabriel, and Peter Hook of Joy Division and New Order.
This is a Volume Playback.
You remember so you never forget.
You want stories? I got stories. Maybe they thought they told me lyrics didn't matter, maybe they thought I would come back with heavier lyrics. I can't tell you what their motives were. I know they weren't negative. These are good people, and they only wanted the best for me. I really believe that. But it just wasn't. I didn't get the best out of myself with that direction. Although I what?
You your real hair back.
As loud as you want it though, I'll make you come up to my...
No love for a nigga breaking hearts. No keys. Push
just the start.
These, the trendsetters, the motherfuckers who get it, the trailblazers, I am Redman. This is Backspin, Sirius XM, get it right.
Fresher than the next bitch. No need for you to ever sweat the next bitch. With speed, I make the best bitch from the exit. Indeed, you gotta know you're thoroughly respected. By me, you get the keys to the Lexus. But no driver, got your own 96 something. The ride and keep your ass tighter than Versace. That's why you gotta watch your friends, you got to watch me. They connive and shit. First cancer crack for back. Then try me, all to get is 50 cent pranks. Ever buyers from the village to the belly. Time to kill it on your belly. No question, have more black chicks between my sheep than that. They say sex is a weapon, so when I shoot, meet your death in less than 8 seconds. Still pounding in my afterlife, laughing. My shit is tight. Who you asking, right?
I don't
know what I
got.
No one can fuck you better.
I don't know what I got.
Sweeps
around, but it gives me a lot.
Keeps you with diamonds and leather.
Friends that tell me I should leave you alone.
Ha 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 ha. Tell the freaks to find a man that ain't on. Fresh to death in Moschino. Coach bag looking half black and Filipino. The Eno Jazz got you a beaver to feel important. Surrounded you feeding Jonah Davis and Charles Jordan. I keep you dub with love. You know these hoes be making me weak. Y'all know how it goes be. And so I creep. I've been sitting since you've been playing with Bobby and Kenny. You can't change a player's game in the ninth inning. The chrome rim spinning keeps them grinning. So I run way the fuck up in them and wrinkle their face like linen. I play hard until they say God. He's keeping it real. Chicka stay hard. Love, don't even trip. I never slip. Nigga, get a grip. What you don't see is what you get. Weapons concealed. What the fuck y'all feel? When your niggas play sick, we can all get it.
Put the
no one can fuck you better.
Sleeps around, but he gives me a lot.
Keeps you with diamonds and leather.
Friends that tell me I should leave you alone.
Tell the freaks to find a man that ain't on. Man that ain't on. Yo, ain't no stopping this. No lie, promise to stay monogamous. I try, but love, you know these hoes be making me weak. Y'all know how it goes be, so I stay deep.
What up, boo? Just keep me laced in the illest snakes. Bank rolls and shit. Back rubs in the fresh tub.
Oh, man. Okay. Traffic here fucking sucks.
But nice style, and I raised you. Basically made you into a dog. Flipping way hair on the shit.
We'll make it.
That's why you can get
we'll make it.
Shake up on the H been down. I ring a bell. So who the player? I still keep you in the illustrators. Taylor made so we can lay up in the shade. Reminiscing of how I fuck the best of shit. Especially when I'm sitting bellies. Don't give a fuck on how you move with them other mommies. I push the Z. Eat shrimps. Get people rocks. Larger than life. Fuck the Reebok board. You made it known who your wife was. I got you fronting in Armani sweaters. Before this rap shit. When you was the levers and bullshit Berettas. AE classes. With more when the glasses shows in Cali. With all the flavors way valleys. Now all your men up in your Benz's hot poles. I swear you be killing me playing this by my pubic hairs. I never worry about the mother chicks. Cause you proved two with your wins when you was spinning that bitch. I shook the little when you was up north. Your commissary stayed valid. Now you live a large on the island. All them collects have me vexed. But when you come home, knew I was coming off with half of them checks. Now we on the ride.
Okay. I don't know what's on the side of this Ford Focus, but on the back, on the bumper, it just says official business. No indication of what type of official business. I was like, man, I should get that on this. Put it on the back of this car. Official business. But there's some kind of seal on the side, on the door. But San Francisco's... Yeah, just the city of San Francisco. Official business. Do all my official business in this Ford Focus. I'm gonna say maybe 80% of people out here on the street are wearing headphones of some kind. Maybe it's more like 70. But it's a lot of people. I don't know. I was going to say, like, oh, it's a lot of people not talking to each other, and oh, God, we're getting so distant. But, you know, who the fuck wants to talk to other random strangers on the street? Really amazed by the number of people who seem to be using the stock iPhone headphones. Still. That says to me, that's like the lowest effort, like, I don't want to have to talk to anyone, I guess I kind of want to listen to something, but I don't actually care enough about what I'm listening to get anything better than this. Section there for a moment, and there was a cop looking at me like he was unhappy about it, but
classic hip hop.
Ooh, how striking. Can I get a t-shirt?
Backspin.
I'm not saying full-on headphones are the answer, necessarily, but, you know, you could do better than those stock earbuds, for sure, too. I see a lot of the wireless, the earbuds, the Apple wireless ones, too. Which I'm coming around, you know, they look appropriately futuristic. They're like just Star Trek enough where I'm like, alright, okay, okay. But I don't know, it's my impression of how many people have those earbuds is really skewed on account of the Beats team or the Apple Music team, or whatever it is in our building here that I'm in front of, so I'm sure they all have them. Alright, there's a ton of construction here. There's a car pulling out of the alley. I need to turn illegally. Well, not, I mean, not illegally. It's blocked. Okay, that car got out, so maybe by the time I am able to get up here, it will not be blocked up and I can just pull in, but
no curl, vacation and be up my V8.
just one night we drive and we escape. Me and you, I think we should ride.
Come on. That was a car trying to get out. Oh no, is the car coming? Shit, man. How am I gonna get in here? It's only one car wide, so if I pick the wrong time to get in here. I've got to let all these cars out. Which the car behind me is not going to be too into. This car behind me is honking because they don't know the other end of the alley is blocked up. So they think I'm just illegally trying to turn down here. Not blocked anymore either, so that's good. All right, I'll see you later.